I'm Ron Southwick, and this is Healthy Bottom Line, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. Earlier this year, the federal government released a new rule calling for some important changes aimed at boosting access and quality in Medicaid programs. To get more perspective, we talked with Gary Jesse, the Senior Vice President of Sellers Dorsey's National Medicaid Consulting Practice. It's a very interesting discussion on a very important topic. Thanks for joining us. We'll get started in just a second. Thank you very much for joining us today on Healthy Bottom Line. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Today, we are talking with Gary Jesse, the Senior Vice President of Sellers Dorsey. Gary, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with an easy question? Just talk to our audience a little bit about your background. I think they'd be interested in hearing a little bit about your backstory.
Sure. Well, I have been with Sellers Dorsey for almost 7 years. I spent many years in state government. I was formerly an assistant commissioner and ran lots of the state programs in Texas, and then moved as the chief deputy of Medicaid, then eventually was appointed as the state's Medicaid director and was responsible for Texas's comprehensive Medicaid program, including managed care. And then ended my career as a deputy executive commissioner, and that role was over every health and human service benefit in the state. So a total of nearly, really over 2 decades in state government. Had an opportunity to be involved nationally in a variety of areas. But really, Medicaid is my passion. And I joined Sellers Dorsey, and I am the founder and leader of our national consulting practice, which is an area in the firm where we provide consulting services across the country in a variety of areas and targets, but really focus predominantly on Medicaid.
Just curious, out of your time as the Deputy Executive Commissioner of Texas's Health and Human Services Commission, sounds like a very challenging position. What was most rewarding to you in that role? Because I mean, so there must have been a lot of hard work, but there had to be some rewards you got from that. What was most gratifying to you in that role?
Yeah, I think in all of the roles, but particularly that role, was just the opportunity to impact countless lives. And, I think what I never took for granted, Ron, was the opportunity, to really shape policy and deliver programs that made a direct impact in people's lives. And never took for granted that the work that we did each and every day, in state government, was directly impacting people and their families and caregivers. And I always said to people, most people will not know who we are at state office. They have no idea who's behind the scenes making these programs work. But what they do count on is that they're available when they need them and that their needs are being met. And so I think most gratifying was the interaction with families and stakeholders. I heard from them directly about the benefits of the programs that we delivered and what a difference it made for them. So I think always through my career, even now in my career in a consulting role, that is really the most gratifying. And the commitment of the people, the staff that I managed, I had 13,000 staff in the division that I led, and they were all there, passion driven. They care deeply about the safety net. And they care deeply about ensuring that people's needs were addressed. And so I think, I've always been a program person. I grew up really interested in wanting to make a difference. And I feel like the combined efforts in the roles that I led in state government and certainly the teams that I had the privilege of working with and leading, we were all there for the right reason. And so it still holds strong for me. When I came into the consulting, I knew I wanted to have an opportunity to drive impact, and I wanted to get to see directly what that impact looks like. And so it's been a long career, but it's been a very rewarding one, and one that I look back with strong emotion that we really did make the type of difference we wanted to make.
It's got to be immensely gratifying, I would think. And
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And it's a big responsibility, You know, when you think to yourself, there are lots of people who are counting on our success, then you know, you just have to stay focused and driven. And there's so many other complexities that happen, you know, appropriations and legislative sessions and all of those things, new federal legislation, new state legislation. It almost becomes a puzzle of sorts. Like, we know where we want to be, but we've got to do these six things to get there. And then we have these new things to work through. So kind of thinking about it just, you know, strategically and analytically, you sometimes are a few steps removed from the direct service delivery because you're making sure that infrastructure and all of those tools are in place to ensure success. And so, yeah, there was never a shortage of things to do. But all of them were important in ensuring the success of ultimately where we wanted to be.
Well, recently the government introduced its final rule for Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program on managed care access, finance, and quality. Obviously, with your background, you're sort of the ideal person to offer some perspective here. But what is the significance of that final rule? Do you think that marks an important milestone?
Absolutely. I think, you know, our federal partners have always been just that, key partners in delivering these programs. And I think when you look at just the sheer amount of regulation that has come through in really a relatively short time, each of these rules in and of themselves have significant lift for states and managed care organizations. But all of these at one time, you know, when you map out any of the particulars, you know, when you focus on children's health insurance and certainly learning from the public health emergency and what we could do better, you know, we were literally making things up as we went along because none of us had ever experienced anything to that magnitude. But when you look at the direction in these rules, clearly CMS is really trying to ensure that that we're taking, you know, this approach. Some states have already had very structured designs around their Medicaid programs. But what you're seeing is a goal by our federal partners to ensure consistency in design and delivery across the country. And so, you know, I it's a long answer to your question. I think the answer is it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. It's certainly a lot to implement. And it's quite ambitious in terms of, even with the one thing that's kind of unique here is all the varied implementation timeframes. But when you lay all those out, there is no shortage of things to do. And lots of people out there probably don't even know that they're behind the gun already, you know, on getting their programs and their systems and everything aligned to be able to deliver in compliance.
Do you think this final rule is going to promote more access to help get more people that could be helped access to the care that they need?
Yeah, I would say that it is certainly designed to ensure that states are tightening their processes around ensuring access. And, you know, somebody who's been in Medicaid for a long time, I would tell you that your managed care organizations, they rise to the occasion regularly and they pay attention to what's monitored and what's regulated because there's so many components in service delivery. But, you know, the same thing I'd say is, access is only as good as the providers you have there to deliver. So when you set a standard around access and you have everybody rising to ensure that access is there, what you can't mitigate, you know, necessarily is what are the providers that are actually in a network? What are the providers who are even available to contract and credential to be part of your service delivery? So I think we all applaud CMS efforts to improve access. I think at the end of the day, if you're delivering services in a rural area, you're delivering services in areas that might be socially isolated, then your access is only as good as what providers exist. So it doesn't solve that issue. I think that's an inherent challenge within any type of network, whether it's commercial or it's Medicaid or it's, you know, it's Medicare. But I do think what goes a long way is upping the ante in terms of what those standards should look like. And when you set time standards, you set distance standards, This is a big step for CMS to really drive what that expectation is. Lots of states have been setting these expectations individually. And so I think, again, one of the goals with these rules is for CMS to say, you know, we don't want it to be this state that has this robust strategy. We'd like to see all states who utilize managed care as a service delivery to have at its core standard measures and standard set of criteria in terms of what good access looks like.
Do you think there are sufficient, for want of a better term, teeth to make some of these standards enforceable, or to make sure that the states are meeting these standards?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, your federal partners set standards, some of which they'll regulate and monitor. But then the responsibility for compliance really rests with states. And states only comply with federal parameters when they have teeth in their own contracts to hold their contractors accountable. So I think that's the nature of this partnership. CMS has what it wants out of these rules, and they'll be monitoring states. Only way that states can ensure compliance is by them monitoring their partners. And so I think you'll see teeth on both sides. You know, lots of the handholding and the compliance will rest with the state. But will CMS be monitoring? Will CMS look to take action, regulatory action for failure? I absolutely believe they will. I think part of the detail here is still to be worked out. You know, CMS hopes to have some of these standards in place as far as 27, you know, 2027. So there's still a lot of iteration to work through. But I do think the goal is that CMS feels like it would have the carrot and sticks it needs to ensure compliance. But having been a former regulator, that really stick in compliance rests heavily on the state, because CMS will monitor the state's compliance. For a state to be in compliance, they'll have to have their own carrots and sticks to ensure that their data and the accuracy of the information that's being reported publicly.
We talked about access, but just what about, and maybe this is kind of a question that would require a crystal ball to answer, but I mean, do you think this will have the access to have the potential to actually improve the quality of care for recipients?
There are provisions, certainly, that that are designed to improve quality. So, you know, quality reporting systems designed around 16 key measures that CMS will be working through. I mean, what I would say to you, Ron, is, I don't want anyone listening to this to think that this is the first step in CMS trying to ensure quality. I think all state Medicaid programs have varying degrees of what they've been pushing for in quality programs. State that I led had quality withhold programs where MCOs were held accountable for meeting quality measures, and they either earned their dollars or they lost those dollars. So lots of states have already been actively engaged in quality assurance programs, monitoring programs, detailed access standards, and liquidated damages and penalties for failure to comply. So I do think when you look at some of these provisions that are codified in the sense that all states are doing this in a similar fashion, the goal is that you can compare quality across the country and that the measures look similar. And it's not like this state has this measure that's kind of like this measure. It really sets some consistency. So almost like a national report card. So I do think these provisions do have, I mean, certainly they're founded on the goal of improving quality. And I do think they will. I think any of these provisions, if you're a state that's not had secret shopper programs before around, you know, network adequacy, if you're a state that's not been publicly reporting on quality measures across plans, all of those things have the potential. When you start publicly reporting data, it gets the attention. And while it may not impact choice, because Ron, I mean, this is really in the weeds, but But even with the most robust report cards out there, the majority of people within managed care don't choose their plan. Most are defaulted into a plan. So you might say, well, if the member's not really reviewing data around the plans to pick a plan, then does it make that difference? And I would say it wholeheartedly does, because when the state's publicly reporting that data, your plans begin to say, oh my goodness, we don't look good compared to this plan. And some of these plans are publicly traded. All of that has the impact in really affecting, you know, change. And I think in this case, it's all positive change. If you're talking about improving quality, if you're talking about improving your member experience, if you're talking about creating additional transparency, I think all of these things combined have the potential to improve this system overall.
You talked about from your experience in Texas about NCOs having to meet certain standards, or if they didn't, then they potentially could face the loss of money. I know that's always that sort of push and pull in healthcare. Like, well, if you penalize us and it makes our jobs even harder, is there merit to that thought? Or do you sort of see that the only way to ensure that everyone meets a high standard is that there are standards and that you have to meet them if you want to continue to get aid?
I do. You know, having run a fee-for-service system and then having ran a managed care system, it's very clear to me that the expectations and the contractual obligations are night and day. Managed care organizations are held to a very high standard. They're heavily regulated, they're heavily monitored, and they're heavily penalized for failure to meet standards. And I think part of that comes from this mentality that, you know, people, when you think about privatization of healthcare, people already feel like the state's given in, like there's this stigma around managed care that it's a bad thing. You know, people politicize it. It's like, oh, you know, it's privatization, it must be certain, you know, politics. But I can tell you that when you look at a managed care service delivery system and you look at the sheer number, I mean, some of these contracts, thousands of pages of standards and very detailed direction on how you have to do something, and heavily monitored, and you know, quality withholds and the ability to impose sanctions and penalties for a variety of things, everything from networks to claims payments to, I mean, you name it, there are standards. And not to mention, very competitive landscape. These contracts are regularly reprocured. These states are all in. I mean, they're holding plans to a high standard, much higher than a member might experience if they were simply in a fee-for-service system. You know, in that system, you enroll any provider that wants to do the work, you give them a Medicaid ID, and you might have some support helping them navigate. But at the end of the day, there's nobody who is being monitored and regulated to the standard that you get when you have a managed care system. And so I think managed care, for a lot of reasons, provides a pathway. If nobody's in charge, then, you know, or if you've got multiple people in charge, I would always say if you've got multiple people in charge, nobody's in charge. But if you put all of your eggs in one basket, you've got a managed care organization that can be regulated, monitored, sanctioned, even rewarded in some regards for performance, then you already have an organization that is deemed and held accountable for outcomes and experience by their members. And so, you know, you might conclude from this conversation, I do think managed care is a positive step for states, which is why we see 75% of lives across the country covered under managed care programs. But I do think at the end of the day that managed care organizations, they have to be incented. They have to be rewarded in some regard. It might be a reward through defaults. They get more members because they provide better quality and their outcomes are better. At the same time, they might be penalized for failure to deliver. And ultimately, they might be penalized by a state not renewing or recontracting with them. So the stakes are really high, Ron. You know, and it's not like, well, we'll figure it out. There are very detailed protocols and strategies on how states oversee these organizations. So, yeah, I do think that, it's the carrot and the stick. Ultimately, it's what you define as a standard, and ultimately, it's what you pay attention to. And if you're not monitoring, if you're not managing your store, then you're probably going to have a problem. And so I think that's where it rests with the state's responsibility to ensure they've got a system in place to really ensure success and accountability. And I go one step further to say the other key to success here is having a partnership with your plan. You know, don't put in a contract and assume everything's going to happen. It's how you work with the plan. It's how you ensure your compliance with the plan. It's how you engage with the plan. It's your operational reviews of the plan. It's all of that to suggest that these plans become an extension of the state. And only through that partnership can success be realized.
The final rule covers a lot of ground. Is there anything that was missing that you thought would have made sense to include or may have been a missed opportunity in the final rule?
I mean, we could probably come up with something, but I would say that it covers a lot of ground. There's something for everybody in these rules. You know, whether it be the interoperability rules or the managed care rules or the eligibility rules or the access rules, there is something for everyone here.
Well, let's say since you've been in this field a long time, let's just live in the fancy world where money's not an issue and where political will is not an issue. I mean, what are the things that could be done to really help these programs the most?
Well, you know, I think it's a combination, you know, and I always put my old hat back on. There are lots of people that believe that we solve our access issues by just paying more. And the reality is that reimbursement certainly is an impact, but reimbursement is really not the in and of itself going to affect the impact. You know, it's not going to solve your challenges. We know the challenges in behavioral health. We know access to psychiatric services can be a challenge. Lots of psychiatrists don't even want to do commercial reimbursement. So, you know, you've got inherent challenges within any area. So I always say when I meet with stakeholders and providers, the first thing they might say is, you know, our administrative burden is high and our reimbursement rates are really lagging. And even when you see reimbursement changes, certainly when you look at managed care, I think the transparency around rates, what you find is managed care organizations often are paying well above the Medicaid fee schedule. And so, you know, you say to the provider, you're getting paid more than you got paid before, but it still doesn't solve your issue. It hasn't solved your workforce challenge. There's still a national shortage in nurses. I mean, you know, in and of itself, reimbursement is not necessarily the answer. Some of this work is hard, and Medicaid is not appealing to some providers just on the basis of, you know, stigma around populations, concerns around no-shows, not keeping appointments. I mean, there are so many factors associated with any of these provisions. But I do think that if you look at what are some of the inherent, I think what are some of the things that most people complain about, I feel like this rule really addresses. I think states have been paying attention. I think CMS has been paying attention. They really want to promote transparency. They want to implement secret shopper programs across the country, which, you know, lots of organizations and states already have secret shopper programs. So it's not to suggest these are gaps that have existed within systems. That's what I would always encourage people to understand is because CMS adopts these provisions in a rule is not to suggest it's never happened. It's been happening alive and well in lots of states, but it is around consistency and expectation. I think transparency and reimbursement across some of these areas, I think transparency and how these rates get passed down to direct care workers is a nod to the fact that we've got a major workforce challenge around direct care workers. And so I think the nod there is to ensure that these reimbursement, this cost and care, that those dollars are being passed down to your direct care workers, that they're actually benefiting and realizing that benefit of delivery. So, I mean, I'm kind of being winded here and I apologize. I would say that, There probably aren't a lot of areas that weren't addressed. I mean, I think somebody could come up. I think stakeholders and advocates would say, yeah, they didn't go far enough on this. They didn't do anything in that. But if you step back and you look at just about every provision and every area that is impacted, there's not a whole lot left. So we might dig in a little bit to some. So I'll wait for you to add some specific questions and areas. But I don't think any of us are surprised. The final rule looks very similar to the introduced rule, which is good because it really does not that CMS was very thoughtful about what they wanted from the very beginning. And I think the feedback from, you know, the comments and feedback would suggest that I don't think anybody's surprised. And I don't think anybody believes that CMS has overstepped in some way around what they're looking for. So I think they were very articulate and also deliberate about what they wanted out of these rules. I think the piece around implementation dates, I think CMS recognizes that that some of these lifts are big and that timing is everything. So just passing a standard and having a date that nobody will be able to comply with does not make much sense. I think it also speaks to the thoughtfulness around making sure that as these provisions are well-defined, you know, when you actually get your direction, you get a rule, and then they'll issue policy guidance. And that policy guidance will give time for states to really understand the details around any of those provisions, but ultimately make sure that they can comply. Because if you look at any of these provisions, certainly if you take out the eligibility one, to make these types of changes to your eligibility systems are big lifts. They're not just big lifts, they're financially involved lifts. And so states ensuring they have funding and that they have their state appropriation to cover the match and all of those things, those are not things that happen overnight. So, you know, I think most of us are excited that we didn't end up with standards that just say, do it all by this date. So I think that really goes to the thoughtfulness. And certainly depending where you are, lots of people say, oh, the dates are probably already all different because if the poli, you know, politically, if something changes, it gives them time to change it or gut it or. And so I think it's more on the thoughtfulness side that many of the people who are shaping these rules have led programs like ours. They've worked in this industry and they understand that these things are not easy or simple.
Complex challenges indeed, I really appreciate your perspective you offer, especially given the work you've done in the field along with so many others as well. So that really offers some great perspective on the final rule, and we'll see what differences it brings in the future. So, but this kind of flew. So we've already gone through a half hour already. So, but thanks so much for taking the time with us today. So, and any final point that we didn't hit on that you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think the last thing I would say, Ron, is, you know, your listeners, you know, cover multiple areas and they certainly have areas that are going to be most important to them. But I would encourage anyone who's trying to wrap their arms around these provisions to really understand the full breadth and really understand how all of these pieces fit together. If it's access that's important to you, that's great. If it's transparency that's important to you, that's great. If it's the quality of the services that are being delivered, that's great. But I would really encourage your listeners to really take in how all of these provisions and all of the covered areas fit together. And they do. Again, you know, I guess my analogy, it's like a puzzle. And they all play an important piece. But while everybody gets in their corner and they're like, yeah, we got this, I think it's really important for people to really just kind of step back and see the full breadth of all of these pieces and understand how they fit together. And I think certainly those of us that have been in this business, those of us that aren't even in the business yet, but future Medicaid directors and leaders, there's a lot here. These programs are the safety net. They're critically important to the people that we serve. And I think all of the investments around ensuring the quality of their services, including the transparency of their services, and including access to these services. It's just it's a partnership between our federal partners and states. It's not new, it's something we've been doing forever, but I think this rule really will bring more attention, more clarity, and more transparency around how these programs look. And so, you know, I can't say I'm excited about all the provisions, but I can tell you that I'm not surprised. And certainly support what we're trying to achieve here. So thank you for the opportunity, and look forward to catching up with you again sometime.
Absolutely. So yes, we will definitely be talking again. But Gary, thanks so much for taking the time today to help navigate some very complex stuff and explaining the impact of some of these regulations for our audience. Obviously, has been looking to see what would be coming. So I think your perspective is going to be very useful to folks. So thanks so much for taking the time, and definitely look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. You've been listening to Healthy Bottom Line, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on social media on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.